Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Groves, and ex-Scotland international and adopted Frenchman, Johnny Beattie. We'll take a look at what turned out to be a comprehensive win for a new-look France side eventually in Cardiff, although it wasn't all plain sailing. And of course, we'll have a look ahead to Le Crunch in the final round of the Six Nations this weekend as France take on England in Lyon, and weigh up all the permutations that go along with that one. And we'll be joined by former England international who spent a long time coaching in France recently, in Joe Worsley too. All that can wait though, Johnny, for a minute or two. I was gutted to be at Twickenham and not with you on Saturday. How was it? Did I miss much?
I wish I was at Twickenham. Oh, mate, you got the cracker. England, Ireland, what a game. And great to see them back and phenomenal for the competition. Just shows how hard it is really to go back to back and win a Grand Slam. People kind of forgot with COVID as well what it's like to go to big stadiums with a home side that's performing when they do get their crowd on side. Because what an atmosphere that was at Twickers. The only thing I would caveat that with is that an emotional reaction? That was a big physical emotional performance. Can they knock it together consistently, find the way they want to play, be settled and do that week in, week out? We hope so because we want an England side back at the top of their game. But an extraordinary game of rugby. And they nullified Ireland, which not many sides have managed to do, but incredibly physical. Their set piece was fantastic and a very impressive win for English boys at Twickenham.
I don't know whether you've intentionally or unintentionally dodged the question, Johnny. Scotland?
All I heard was Twickenham. But I was in the studio in Ealing with Sir Ian McGeachan, Maggie Alfonsi and Jill Douglas with the ITV team. And to be honest, I'm quite happy that I wasn't in Rome. And that was a game for Scotland to cement second place in the competition for the first time in 20 odd years. If they'd beaten Italy, they're now staring down the barrel of finishing fifth potentially, which is quite the swing.
Not just that, Johnny. I mean, like, obviously it's all done with the benefit of hindsight, but if they had won, they'd be going to Dublin in a straight shootout for the title.
Yeah, I mean, they're still going with a chance at winning a triple crown, which they haven't done in 20 years either. But yeah, it's maddening, isn't it? As, you know, a Scottish sports fan, a former Scottish player, and now you talk about the games and you want them and you will them to do so well. And they have given us such joy. I mean, knocking over England four times on the trot, incredible. Should have beaten France, Jekyll and Hyde down in Cardiff, but you win the game, first win in Cardiff for 20 years, and you think they're on the right trajectory, but I think Scotland are a side that are never going to have the biggest pool of players, right? I think we're fairly well coached and we're capable of performing extremely well and knocking over the big boys, but we're also perfectly capable of falling flat on our faces. And that's what happened in Rome. Interesting, if you look through the stats, up until that game, we were the side that had kicked the most in the competition. We decided whether it was strategy or whether it was just a rush of blood to head on the field for the players to run everything. And we ran poorly and we unforced errors, penalty count was high, and all these errors compounded and Italy were strong with ball in hand and we couldn't compete, we couldn't cope. So disappointing. I still don't understand. I haven't spoken to the boys in the camp to know if it was a choice in strategy or whether that was just maybe, I don't know, maybe they're psychologically believed somewhere they were stronger, therefore they could take the game to Italy, but they came unstuck. But as I said, wonderful result for England. Tremendous result for Italy, and it is awesome for the competition for the Six Nations because we had quite a few one-sided and potentially drab games up until then without jeopardy. Now everything is reset. We have no idea who is going to finish where going into the last weekend of the Six Nations, and that is pretty exciting. But it's shit to be Scottish. That's what you're trying to say to him.
Okay, we'll leave it there. To Cardiff, our focus. France, are they back, Johnny? Or what did you make of the game overall? Because you had obviously been suggesting, give it time, two knee-jerk reactions in the media up to this point. They were behind until the 65th minute, we should say, and then they made it look comfortable, but they had a load of territory. They kept Wales out of their 22 almost completely, apart from the few tries that they did get. So where do you rank that France performance?
Better. Much better. And look, going away and winning in Cardiff is never easy. Don't get me wrong, but all the bits that we spoke about, the injection of youth and enthusiasm and a team finding its feet again away from home, which is very, very hard. But I think fundamentally, a team just are right on the back course because they found some of their basics. Their line-out functioned. They had positive intentions. They held onto the ball to play rugby, which isn't always easy at this level. We see a lot more kicking, as I just mentioned, for Scotland, and things haven't been going well. So mentally, it's a little switch that's gone off for the playing group, for the players to refound their confidence, and for the French rugby public to have more faith. I mean, in the end, it's five tries. It's away from home. And they dominated some big collisions. That was the thing that impressed me, was Miafu, Colomb when he came on, Flamand, Greg Aldrit. When they're direct, when they're aggressive and they dominate collisions, they can go forward, hold on to ball, and they're impressive. So yeah, I mean, they're not where they were 18 months ago, but this is maybe also the start of another cycle, right? With youngsters, Leo Barry, Le Garec, Thibaut Flamand, Miafu, Deporter, all well worthy of their place, performing well, the top 14, coming in and performing at the top level. And I think it was Haron Ordicky that said this week before the game, freshness is very important in rugby. And Fabian had, maybe the criticism was that he had stuck with what had worked for the past 4 years, but a little change, a little bit of difference, some young guys coming in, taking their chance. I really enjoyed watching it. I thought it was another phenomenal game. That was the other thing, really exciting to follow. Like you mentioned, it wasn't easy. So it was tight up to the 60th minute, a little bit of flakiness potentially with their defense. I don't think Sean Edwards will be particularly happy with that performance. Three line breaks that led to tries from 40 meters out, 45 meters out, but just system errors, one-on-one things, people over chasing, over reading, and creating gaps that were all too easy for Wales. But generally, with ball in hand and their set piece performing, they were much, much better. The discipline also, three penalties the entire game.
Yeah, that's the best ever in the Six Nations, three penalties conceded. And after we spent a load of time in the last couple of weeks talking about how they couldn't keep 15 men on the field and they'd been down to 14 for half of the opening three rounds. Eight changes. You mentioned freshness, youth as well. So a glimpse into the future. We chatted about selection last week, early in the week, and we referenced most of these changes, mm-hmm. but we didn't see Deporter starting, especially after he played last week so well in the top 14. What do you make of his debut?
I think, mate, he's been great. He's been great to follow in the top 14, but he didn't look like a fish out of water. He was at fault a little bit for the first try.
Yeah.
But that also, you could argue that Toma Ramos has overchased and come up too quickly, and Deporter's been half checked. So there's a little bit of a line check, and that's why the line break is made by Dyer. But globally, you look at the youth enthusiasm. You got Biai Barry on the outside, you know, club mates he knows very well. He looked settled. He didn't look disturbed at all. I thought Leo Barry also very, very good. And Deporter, like, you forget, for such a young boy, not fazed by the occasion at all. Confident, happy to take the ball to the line. He came up with a couple of big defensive hits as well and slotted straight into the system. You forget that he's also been there for quite a few months in the background, chomping at Galtier's heels, trying to get this test. So no, mate, I was impressed, and I think it'll be the first of many for him. He's an outstanding prospect.
And then obviously the man everyone has been talking about in the aftermath of the game, Nolan Le Garec. We've chatted about him a lot over recent years. He was clearly a star in the making. It was just a matter of time, but he's come in and he's really taken his chance.
He was incredible. Man of the match. I actually chatted to Stu Lancaster earlier in the week, pre-game, and he was just talking about how big a hole he's left at Racing. People don't really realise how influential he is. And as a 9-10 combo, for their first game together, they were effectively faultless, dynamic, they sped the game up, they're exciting to watch. And also just the fearlessness of youth. Like, we talk about that Shistera, that behind the back pass for 40 meters. To have that confidence is incredible. So he was a nine, superb. The question now is for Toma Ramos. Where do you stick him? Because he's a phenomenal 10. Sorry, he's a phenomenal 15. Is he better at 10? He was full of class the weekend, comfortable, steady in his choices, terrific distribution. He would be now my first choice 10 until Intermac is back. He has a vision and skill set that are quite remarkable. And he's also phenomenal from the tee. I think he was 7 out of 8 at the weekend. So I don't know, like you could chuck any combos in, but Tomo Ramos, just very settled, relaxed rugby player who barely sets foot wrong. Very smart boy. And I thought as a combo, the pair of them together looked pretty impressive.
So even when Jalabert comes back, you wouldn't have him in?
I thought there's an argument that defensively, Tomo Ramos is more secure. So the flakiness around Jalibert. Jalibert is phenomenal ball in hand going forward, but he's a little bit weaker defensively. And Tomo Ramos still has that ability to step. You saw the way he straightened everything up on the first try for Gilfico in the corner. He has a real feeling around the rugby field that is not faultless. He's just very, very steady. And he doesn't give anything away defensively. He's a very, very smart rugby player. And the questions are always raised when a fullback steps up into their second position, you know, can they back up? He spends so much time there for Toulouse. I mean, you'd never really guess that he had only started a few or been involved in a few tests as a 10 in the French jersey. He was excellent the weekend. So I think, yeah, going forward, you look at the big moments, maybe Mathieu Jalibert missed at the World Cup, you know, being run over by Eben Etzebeth, easy try. At the World, would that have happened with Ramos in the 10 jersey? I'm not so sure. So no, very impressed by him and hoping that he gets a decent run now, potentially through to the summer tour in Argentina in the 10 jersey.
You referenced that pass from Le Garec, everyone's talking about it. Where do you stand on it? Because it's very French, it's brilliant, the skill is amazing, 30 metres out the back. But at that point in the game as well, there was an advantage and there is a fair amount of risk for that. He didn't know exactly where it was going, did he?
I love it. And he was the first after the game, he did an interview with Canal Plus or French TV. And he said, yeah, you know, it's something that's in my game, it's in my locker. Like I could have very easily finished wrong and it could have been intercepted, but it came off. But it's part of the excitement of rugby, is throwing those types of passes inspired by Dmitry Yashvili 20 odd years ago. Why not? It gets fans on their feet. It's engaging. It's fun. And I know that's not always what we want. And some coaches squash it out of us. But for neutrals, if you're inspiring people to be part of the game, that's what you want to see. Outstanding piece of skill. The fearlessness to try it. That's probably the youth in him as well. He didn't think twice. He's just like, get this ball back into the middle of the field and see what happens. And he's got the skill set and the ability and the belief to pull it off. So, no, I absolutely loved it.
And before we come into chatting to our guest and talking about this weekend's game, France against England specifically, how important is it for France?
In terms of continuing with confidence, in terms of support for French rugby, it's enormous. It's also the biggest game, right? It's Le Crunch, as it's called. I'm not sure they call it the crunch in England.
Yeah.
But it's the one game that all Frenchies want to win. So yeah, for support and for the playing group and for confidence, it's huge. Also, there's a chance that they can finish second. There's also a really mathematical long shot that they can win the competition if they win handsomely and things go pear-shaped in Dublin for Ireland.
Need a big favour from Scotland for that, Johnny, as well.
Yeah, sign us up. Couldn't do Rome, but we can do Dublin. But the other big bit that nobody's really talking about is the financial element, in that the prize distribution by the Six Nations is 16 million quid, which is a lot of money. And the FFR has just announced they're going to rejig the investment that goes into the national team. So at this stage, second place in the competition takes home 4 million euros, third place takes 2.9 million, and fourth takes 2.3. So there's nearly a 2 million euro swing in prize money and funding for the FFR and for Fabien Galthié's side that have been very well supported over the past 2-3 seasons. So the financial implications of this weekend's game are absolutely massive.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, let's get an England point of view on what was an epic win for them over Ireland at Twickenham and how they'll be approaching the game against France and Lyon this weekend. Former England international and ex-Bordeaux, Clermont and Cast coach Joe Worsley joins us. How you doing?
Oh, good, thanks.
Are you in a calf, mate?
It sounds a little bit loud here. Yeah, I am. It's a biker's calf.
An English biker's calf or a French biker's calf?
English one, unfortunately. I'm popping over to France on Sunday. So I'll be in a French biker's calf on Monday.
We'll come on to Le Crunch, as we always call it, very shortly. But you were obviously involved with Georgia most recently in the World Cup, which wasn't so long ago. You're back in England now. What are you up to at the moment?
I'm still spending a lot of time in France. We've got 5 months off between jobs. So I'm trying to launch a top 14 channel. No one watches French rugby in the UK. I'm trying to find a way around that and try and get it popularised there and show the world the top 14.
Hey, we're on board with that, Johnny.
Sign us up, mate. John, I've had a chat.
Yeah, definitely. It's someone like Johnny lives over there, lives and breathes it as well. So it's strange when you come back that it's not that watched. But we'll hopefully change that in the next 6 months or so.
We're on it. We're on it, mate. Mate, looking back at the World Cup, how was it as an experience for you? Obviously, you've been part of them as players. How was the experience leading Georgia and being part of that setup?
Yeah, it was really enjoyable. I'm a little disappointed. I felt that we could have got to quarterfinals had we have paired a bit better and done things a bit differently. But you always have those regrets at the end of a competition like that. The team's moved on enormously from where it was 4 years before, and they'll keep developing now under Cockerell, I'm sure. So it was a really fun experience. Some frustrations of being a coach like normal, but some great experiences as well.
You mentioned Cockers. Did he chat to you before he took the job or not?
Yeah, he did. He did. And the fact he's prepared to move over there is a big step, because until you get that cultural understanding, which you can only really get from spending serious time there, I think it's a tough gig to change them and understand how to make things work. But I think he's probably a very good choice from them as a head of rugby.
Joe, you spent the best part of a decade working in the top 14, not in the Premiership yet. You've done international rugby. Has that been a conscious choice, or has that just been the way it's panned out so far?
No, I think I had a 2-year contract and I enjoyed France so much, I ended up staying for a long time. We came back for various family reasons, still spend a lot of time out there. I will be back there at some point in the future, but certainly working in England would be, despite the situation at the moment, the club rugby here still would be a wonderful thing to do. I have to do it at some point.
Let's talk England then. They obviously finished third at the World Cup, but there was a lot of doom and gloom ahead of Saturday about the style of play, the fact that there wasn't much in terms of their attacking identity. That changed at Twickenham against Ireland, but what do you make of them generally so far?
Certainly they got to the semi-final, but you weren't seeing a type of rugby that would win them anything, because you'd come up against a team like South Africa normally, it's dry. And they would dominate you, that kind of game plan, because we just don't have the people who can compete with them in certain areas of that game. So we do have some talent in the country, and finding the right kind of game plan for the team is probably quite key, and identity for the team is quite key. Hopefully we saw flashes of maybe where they're going at the weekend. Part of that is obviously who you pick. The other part is how the team's coached and prepared to allow them all to play together in the right way. Someone from Harlequins can't just drop into the England team and play like they're playing for Harlequins. teams will be prepared around them. So I'm just hoping that weekend's performance is the first step in a progression of the team going towards that kind of play.
And mate, talking about the prep, so you obviously know Steve Borthwick very well. You've played with him, you've played against him. What is it going to be like for him having to learn on the hoof? Like, I refer to it as a very cruel environment. He's a very young head coach. But what do you expect from him as a bloke and a head coach for England over the next few years?
I know as a human being, he'd have been wearing those performances before, affecting his life in every way because he's really invested. He would be working from day one. He would be working as hard as anyone you've ever met could possibly work. He's one of the most hardworking individuals I know. So people don't care about that side of it, but he does really put it in. So I'm hoping him and the coaching group he's with have found the right path and they're happy with it and they'll persevere with it.
And you mentioned he'd have worn those defeats, particularly obviously home to Fiji. They got hammered by France last year. The World Cup, you sort of suggested there, they adopted a certain identity to get so far, I suppose. Now they've got an opportunity to properly rebuild. What did you see against Ireland on Saturday to suggest where they are going to go in terms of their identity from here?
Yeah, it's tough to put it all on one game. But, for example, second try England scored, Furbank scored it. Ireland, they put pressure on Ireland with a good pressure game, which they've always had. And then Ireland kicked them the ball. And Ireland had it for them. Normally, they're so efficient and give up no easy options. But Ireland had a really poor chase. One half of the pitch, they had one and a half men. So England recognised that, went to the space, and then straight away recognised where they got fast ball, and they recognised and played quickly on top of it and played back the other way, and which finished in the try. So it's just nice seeing the team acting and recognising things quickly, accelerating when the right moment happened and scoring a try like that. So that's maybe one instance of a game in which they did that a couple of times. So hopefully in the future that will become second nature.
On the other side of the coin, there's been a bit of change with defence as well. So Felix Jones has come in. That's your area of expertise. You've been part of loads of teams going back to like Wasps back in the day, blitz defences. What have you made of that adaptation so far? Because it's not an easy thing to coach when teams in the Prem aren't used to it at all. It's an entirely new system. So what have you made of their blitz setup so far?
Like everyone's been talking about, it does take time to adjust to that kind of line speed, and there are various learning curves still with which the team will get better at doing it together, I'm sure, as they go on. But even at the weekend, they got done a couple of times, but people get carried away with that. They don't see all the opportunities you shut down, especially a team like Ireland who play a lot of shape and organization. When you do bring line speed like they did, it's far, far easier to shut them down rather than allow them to run 20 phases in a row, at which some point someone's going to be right penalty or there's going to be a line break. So yes, whilst there's a couple of errors, the ability to suffocate the opposition with your defence is something that brings a lot of bonuses which people don't really see because they're not as tangible as someone screwing up once or twice in defence and you're seeing a line break after that. So they've got to back it, go with it. It's good. I like it. A team that plays like that in defence can also in attack become a team that can suffocate people as well. So it's a good attitude to have.
What are the keys to getting it right in terms of the blitz? And you mentioned it takes time. I think Felix Jones himself said it will take us 10 games to sort of really see it properly embedded. Does it take longer than other defensive systems to get right?
No, but people haven't probably done it as much, so they're not as used to it as they would be for a less aggressive defence. But listen, you still need to defend with control as well. Just about the team recognising when you use one or the other. Yes, it's a blitz defence, but there's still various moments during that game where they would have had to have adapted and used traditional control defence, for example, because the opposition have fast forward, turnover, whatever. It's more that ability of the team to react together at the right moments, which makes a difference.
And to be able to, as again, it's like the heads-up rugby in attack. It's heads-up in defence. What's our system? How are we calling? How are we vocal? But the one thing that I love is when you see England get off the line and they are offensive, it allows them to dominate those collisions. And you see people like Ben Earl coming into the game, able to jackal. Then there's turnover ball shifted. Other boys are on the front foot. Like, how impressed were you, an individual like Ben Earl, who, again, defence and attack at the weekend was pretty impressive?
Yeah, I was really impressed with him. I was there watching it live. And yeah, his footwork and attack is insane. He's got a real talent. Yes, he can get over the ball. I think historically they didn't pick him because of his defence, his tackling. But even that, there was no instance in which he thought he was a poor defender. So he was rightfully man of the match. And I was very impressed with him that weekend.
And talking about the Blitz defence, how different is the Felix Jones England defence to the Sean Edwards France defence?
Sean morphed away from out and out line speed because teams started to use tactics and strategies against it that caused problems and resulted in line breaks and tries. There's the strengths and weaknesses for everything. But he moved more towards a heavy competing at the ruck as opposed to emphasis on line speed. So he moved away from that with the teams he's coached, I think. It still encourages it. But I think he puts more emphasis on the ability to jack or the ability to turn over the ball or so.
What have you made so far of France this competition?
Yeah, it's been an interesting one. You saw flashes against Wales of a team that, again, can attack with instinct and can be incredibly dangerous. But everyone was shell-shocked when they lost the World Cup. The French nation, and especially the rugby part of that, was in complete shock. So there are people questioning the nature of their rugby under Galtier, and someone like Sean, what he brings to it. It's a mistake. They needed to have a better organisation side to compete at the top, like they've been doing. They got to kick at the right time, counter-attack at the right time. And I think they got that balance a bit better at the weekend, but I don't know, Wales weren't great either. So it's hard to put too much on that performance. But some of the young talent coming through, they're still missing the Tamaka and Dupont. Although Le Garrick's been ripping up for Racing during the top 14. So I think he's going to be a very, very good alternative going forward for them. So it's, in terms of next week, it's going to be a radically different challenge for England. The Blitz defence we're just talking about, one of the things that's tricky when you're doing that is a team like France can play quickly around the ruck off the first pass and attack the spacings there. And that's kind of irrelevant to Blitz defence. And that's where it becomes more difficult. If they do get a little bit fastball there and then you try and pull the trigger on Blitz defence afterwards, you can really be disjointed and have problems afterwards. So France do that a lot. So it's going to be a different challenge for England as opposed to an organised team like Ireland who tend to go through their attacking systems, which are more readable, still very efficient and difficult to defend against, but more readable than a team who act instinctively at times, like France.
So if you're Steve Borthwick and you're Felix Jones, what are you saying to your players this week? Where do you reckon the key elements in this game are if they're going to win away from home against the French side that knows this game is now absolutely massive? And again, for everyone, supporters, coaches, the crowd, it's absolutely huge for both nations. How do you think this game is going to be won and lost?
I think obviously, for me, they still got to execute their pressure game well, which Ireland weren't as efficient as normal there. England were pretty good. But given those opportunities where they can speed up the play and attack, like you saw the second try we talked about earlier, certainly they won't change the defensive system. The defensive system doesn't change. Systems don't change week in, week out for teams. They just emphasise a different area of that. And what they probably emphasise is the ability of the French to utilise and attack the space around the rucks. Probably just work a bit harder on that. And if they do get go forward, how they react at the back of that? Do they still hammer it, or do they have to think of an alternative?
Where do you reckon the key battles are in terms of head-to-heads and personnel, key positions this weekend? What do you think are going to be the key factors in winning?
Ramos is going to be, if they pick him at 10 again, he's got many talents. Incredible player, incredible. But Ken, not physical in the slightest. Not natural 10. He's not bad to lose, but when he plays, they tend to be a team that attack directly off him. So yeah, that would be very important to England, how they put him under the heat so that he hopefully makes lots of mistakes. That's going to be a big deal. Some of the young guys that came in are still unknown at that level. Leo Bach, he can also be somebody who, if you put heat on him, well, we'll see. He's an incredible talent, but I think he's also capable of an occasional error as well. Now, obviously, scrum, small line out, some of the forwards play that physicality side of it. France are now really the only other team with Africa who can dominate teams with that side of things. So the teams, England teams, going to have to be capable of dealing with that, which I think they should be able to. We shouldn't have too much fear of it. But that side of it will have to be the classical, old rugby side of things, never goes away, and they'll have to deal with that as well.
And in terms of Steve Borthwick's selection, do you think it'll be exactly the same? Because he obviously picked Ollie Chesham in the back row, partly because of Ireland's line-out strength, scored loads of tries from there, and obviously have been very good. And that selection obviously works. George Martin coming back up against that France pack, is he arguably one of England's most important players now?
Yeah, I really like him. He's a physical player, puts himself around, rucking, he smashes things. The defense is a great tackler. So, yeah, you need physicality in a team like that, especially, again, if you want to run the defense they want to run, you've got to be able to win those initial collisions. If you get a big guy running in and getting fastball, it's hard to get the width, and you need time to execute your defense system. And you win that for people like George Martin smashing people and allowing you the time to do it. If someone makes a weak tackle, and the ball's quick, that's when you start to get these issues with one guy flying, one guy not. You get these dog legs or holes in defence that you shouldn't get. People like George Martin allow that to happen. So I'd certainly keep him in the team. I think he's awesome. In terms of other choices, I think maybe strategy and tactics, you can change one or two things. Put some heat on the French line out with Chessem in or out. Well, we'll see. I think with the good performance they put in, I think there might be one or two changes. Some of the subs came on and did well, so we'll see.
It's going to be some game. Mate, broadening out to the rest of the tournament, you were part of the Georgia coaching staff when they beat Italy not so long ago.
Yeah.
I think it was 2022. What have you made of the improvement that Italy have made so far and that win against Scotland at the weekend?
I watched them play England and I thought they were a bit more controlled than they've been, yet still threatened at times. I thought they advanced under the regime before. Very much a one-sided advance in which an attack they became far more dangerous. But I think the turnover to success rate wasn't high enough to cut it at that level. Maybe Gonzalo's come in and managed to try and maintain as much of that as possible, but put in a foundation of organisation and that side of things, which prevents the team from getting too carried away and exposing themselves. And if you expose yourselves too often at test level, you're not going to win matches. Whereas they've been in virtually every game, and one of the reasons is they got that balance seemingly a bit better.
I'm going to ask the age-old question now, but you're an expert having been involved with Georgia. People will no longer be talking about getting rid of Italy now, rightly so. They probably never should have been. But they should still be talking about Georgia as a team that can be involved at this level. So would you support Georgia being added to the Six Nations to become seven, or promotion and relegation, or how do you see it?
I don't know. There's so many connotations here. The English league, we need to sort that out. A league that takes 6 months and then they roll into the Six Nations. Some, I don't know. They find a solution, season-long, year-long solutions for the issues we have. And it's a real headache to work out what that's going to be. Chucking in another team into the Six Nations would then further increase that tournament. You can't play that many internationals in a row without some serious circulation of the team. So rotation of the team, sorry. So I think whilst yes, I want Georgia to be in there, I think they deserve it. Given another 5 years, they'll be even better, even more ready for that. But how you do that, that is a headache involving not just the Six Nations, involving club rugby in the UK and France and the global international calendars. And sort that one out, LRB and RFU. Good luck.
Johnny, you're in the World Rugby offices, you sort it out.
Predictions this weekend, lads. Super Saturday. Joe, Wales, Italy, Ireland, Scotland, France, England. Who's winning each of those and who's winning the comp?
I'm going to go Wales, England, because I'm English, and Ireland. Yeah, they're going to bounce back completely.
What about you, Johnny? I mean, I think it'd take something incredible for Ireland not to win the title, but obviously the games you mentioned, how do you see them going?
I'd like to see Wales win at home because it's been a difficult old championship for them. Italy have had a win. I think Ireland are going to be too strong for Scotland, given what we saw at the World Cup and how Ireland were almost cruelly comfortable with Scotland's attack. Scotland are going to have to go all out completely different and throw different shapes if they're going to test Ireland. And I am going to go, apologies, Joe, I'm going to go France at home against England to round off, probably finish second in the competition. Finish strong and supporters back on track and everyone happy.
You must feel a bit French, Joe. Johnny said apologies there, but having been there so long, you must feel a little bit French.
No, I do. I loved it there. It's a great country. Rugby's awesome. So yeah, but like I say, I'm English, I'm supporting England.
Absolutely. Well, Joe, thanks so much for coming on. Great to get your insight on the defence in particular, and massive good luck getting the top 14 brought over here. We couldn't endorse it anymore.
Awesome. Thanks, yep. Guys.
And we look forward to helping as well if we can.
Excellent. I'll catch you all next time.
Cheers, mate.
Bye.
Good insight there from Joe, particularly on the Blitz defence, Johnny. he mentioned that he hadn't fully analysed the game back at Twickenham because he was there as a fan. And that was essentially how he was when he was with you in Edinburgh for the Calcutta Cup. But I guess he wasn't quite so happy that day.
No, but then I think it's been a mixed bag for everyone this competition, hasn't it? In terms of happiness and days out and enjoyment. It's been a mixed old bag for every single country. But yeah, great to have his insight. He's obviously spent a huge amount of time in the top 14 with Cast and Bordeaux. And yeah, if you want to speak to a man about Blitz, I mean, he started off in the Blitz with Sean Edwards and Warren Gatland about 20 years ago at Wasps. So great to have him on the podcast. And also looking forward to seeing everything that he ramps up with the top 14 next season. A few phone calls been made. Hopefully we can help him out as well in terms of getting more on screens back home for everyone in the UK and Ireland. So yeah, we're fans of that and great to have his insight.
And we asked Joe about how England would tweak it slightly after such a brilliant result against Ireland to face this France side. Flipping it round for you, how did France go about playing an England team that played how they did with their blitz defence against Ireland? How will France approach it?
I would try and make it as unstructured and physical as possible. I think France have shown now that they can boss collision. England showed when the ball goes off the field and their line out is allowed to function, that was a big influence. Like Ollie Chessum, the boys they've got, they are a very, very smart line out with Steve Borthwick, the mastermind behind it. So I wouldn't even bother going line out time against them. France's line out has been shaky. Their defensive line out is non-existent. It's a mirror line out that doesn't really contest too often. So I would look at removing that altogether and try and make it as physical as possible. Keep the ball on the field. Try and beat England up. I know Joe said as well, look, England can try and compete in that area, but I think France, with your Miafus, with your Antonios, you saw the big carries, Coloms, the impact these boys have when they come on, try and make it as physical as possible. And I wouldn't give England anything at line-out time. Then you come back to your fundamentals, scrum, can they do a job on Ellis Genge? On that side, you saw the impact of having the right-hand side of the scrum with Antonio and Manny. I mean, you've got 300 and something kegs right there. So can they squeeze them at scrum time? And then what can they generate when they've got ball in hand? They look dangerous at the weekend. They look much more effective, look much more confident. So yeah, I'm hoping for more of the same in that respect.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about France's attack, because that was the area that you mentioned you weren't quite sure about in terms of the new coaching setup. Obviously, people say attack is the last thing to come, but France were already good in that area. There's obviously been a load of personnel changes between round three and round four. They dominated territory completely against Wales, 66% territory, 13 visits to the opposition 22, but they did waste some chances, I suppose, didn't they?
They did. They were a little bit frantic in nature, but I'd still come back to the positive of having that amount of territory. You look at the first two games in the comp, I mean, they had barely any ball because they couldn't win a line out, scrappy. Now at least they've got a foothold in the game and they'll generate opportunities. The big bit for me comes back to physicality. When France have one half decent launch play and get on the front foot, they're very difficult to contain. And I think Joe kind of alluded to that, even with a blitz defense in England, the unstructured nature of France coming around the corner, whether it's Antonio, Greg, big boys, they're hard to stop. And I think that's where the game ultimately is going to be won and lost, is physicality. If France can generate something off first phase and get away into the game, I think they can knock England onto the back foot and then they can convert. Yes, they let some points go against Wales in Cardiff, but I think with a big expectant crowd in France at their back cheering them on, I think they'll be fairly dangerous this weekend. So looking forward to it, should be an awesome clash.
And Joe mentioned Tomás Ramos in terms of being a potential weakness at 10 as well as a potential strength. It'll be interesting to see whether England stick in terms of George Ford or twist with Marcus Smith.
A lot's been made of that. I mean, a lot's been made of that, but I also think it's easy, not that I want to bag Marcus Smith, he's a fantastic rugby player, but I think it is easy coming onto the field with that energy, with the crowd up, Ireland on the back foot and knocking over a drop goal. I don't want to take in, but like George Ford knocked three over at the World Cup.
Yeah, an advantage as well. It's not the drop goal, is it? I guess people judging where you want to go at fly half, isn't it? Which is the same with France that you were talking about with Jalibert when he comes back versus Ramos.
Yeah, no, I really enjoy them both. But I think in terms of top flight international rugby, and I think Marcus Smith had been criticised before that game, or, you know, maybe he's not the answer, but they're kind of blessed. Like, they've got strength and depth with two or three different options. Obviously, Faz isn't there. He's going to Racing. But Ford, exceptional. I thought he was very, very good for 60-odd, 65 minutes. And Marcus Smith finished the job. So I don't think either of them are as weak defensively as Mathieu Jalibert, personally. And I think England are blessed. They've got two fairly decent first-choice options there.
And in terms of the France squad, Fabien Galthié has called up Munster centre Antoine Frisch, who has played for Ireland A, but he's also played for the French Barbarians. That's created a little bit of a stir in the Irish media because could have major implications for his Munster future. Can you see him being involved at the weekend, or is that just him to train with a group and get familiar with it?
I mean, I think Emilien Gailleton was also with the squad. So I think it would be, I mean, I didn't see Deportaire coming last weekend and I thought it was too late in the competition, so I might be completely wrong, but I don't see them bringing him over to then cap him in the last game. I might be completely wrong and Fabian might have that up his sleeve, but I think the fact that it is the crunch, the fact that the second place is on the line, that there are big implications, I think that he will stick with Moefana, and then potentially if there's another change to be made, it might be Gailleton that comes in. Although Frisch is physical. That's the difference, is that Gailleton's an outside centre, probably just an outside centre, incredible athlete, runner, whereas Frisch maybe got more physicality and has been going very well for Munster. So no idea is the honest answer, but it just shows, again, there's different routes into international rugby, right? You look at Manny Miafu coming all the way over into the French side. There's a young French kid that's gone, taking up another opportunity after playing Pro de Deux and various other teams, and end up in Munster, taking up a wonderful opportunity and has played some great rugby. And here he is back in the French setup. So also for him, is he going to stay over there in the URC? Is he going to come back to the top 14? Surely this media attention will have caught the eye of quite a few different suitors, and there's a strong chance he might be heading back over to France sometime soon.
Yeah, and loads of personnel changes for France between round three and round four. But generally, obviously, over the course of the past 3 or 4 years, Fabien Galthié has been renowned for the consistency in his selection, which is very different from his predecessors with France. Too early in the week, really, for us to be discussing selection in terms of actual knowledge that we might have picked up from training footage, that kind of thing. But given how things went in Cardiff, do you see it being the same 23 or any changes?
I don't see many changes at all. It's very hard, obviously, to change a side that's winning. I mean, who could you see potentially coming back in? If we look back in injuries and people that have missed out, everything now has been straight choices. So I don't see there being many, if any. Le Garec, I expect to run again a nine. He was outstanding, man of the match. Tomas Ramos absolutely fit the bill. So I don't expect, I mean, if it'd been a loss or there'd been another slip up, maybe you'd give people opportunities in the last game. But I think those boys that were part of the 23 have earned the right to go again. They performed really well and a big away win. So no, I expect it to be more of the same this weekend against the English.
Right, we've chatted about all the Six Nations action in round four. Top 14 was on as well at the weekend, though. We should get your meter moment of the week, Johnny.
I was close. I watched my old side Bayonne. I'm not sure if you watched that one, but that was a...
I saw some clips.
Insane.
So many points.
Absolutely insane. Finishing, cards, tries. One of the most enjoyable and stressful games that I've watched in a long, long time. Obviously, I was willing Bayonne to get an away win against their Bernay neighbours, Po. It wasn't quite to be, but they got a defensive bonus point. But that was an incredible game of rugby. But the meter moment of the weekend has to be Nolan Le Garec. The Shistera behind the back pass, 40 metres into Tomas Ramos. A whole crowd on their feet, everyone back in France, and everyone watching it on the TV loving it. A little bit of French flair that we haven't seen, and confidence back into the side and youth. So that is clearly the most exciting moment from the weekend. A bit of audacity from the youngster, and hopefully we'll see a bit more this weekend against the English boys.
There we go. That was Johnny's meter moment of the week, and meter is the world's number one wireless meat thermometer, recently making over 20 million cooks better with their game-changing app and completely wireless Bluetooth meat probe. You can use it on a barbecue, in the oven, or in a pan, and you can get your hands on one at meter.com. Plus, you can get 10% off any full price item. All you have to do is enter the code FrenchPod10 at checkout. That's FrenchPod10, and you'll get 10% off any full price item at meter.com. I mentioned that one top 14 game, Johnny. What about the others? Clermont drawing at home to Oyonnax stood out to me. Is there issues in Clermont?
It was... The issue at the weekend in France was the conditions were absolutely horrendous. So everything was a bit of a washout. So Clermont-Oyonnax, quite a nice result for Oyonnax in that. That's Joël Abde, now head coach. He used to work with Fred Chary and Christophe Urios, who are the coaches at Clermont. Oyonnax have been written off after losing at home last weekend to Montpellier. So for Oyonnax to get on the road, in a sort of derby. I mean, geographically, they're quite close. And to pick up 2 points is decent for them at Clermont. Clermont, there's still questions out, really. I mean, I know the conditions were a leveler, but you would never historically expect Oyonnax to go to Clermont and draw. Montpellier, again, horrendous conditions, but they ground out a win against Big Ben Tamifuna and the Bordeaux boys. Another win for Montpellier, so they keep on trucking. Perpignan, that was probably the most impressive win at the weekend. 27-17 over Toulouse. You had Hugo Mola come out after the game and just flat out appreciation for the crowd, the carnival that is a Catalan crowd, how they get behind their side. And they were soundly beaten, 27-17. That was a cracker as well, and an important win for Perpignan. So all of the sides that are kind of down in that danger area, in the danger zone, still plugging away, picking up points, and they're going to take it all the way to the end. So still distant at the bottom for Oyonnax, but that was a big 2 points to pick up on the road.
Yeah, no top 14 action this weekend. So all eyes on Le Crunch, as well as a little bit on Dublin, Johnny, to see if Scotland can do France or England a favour. But very unlikely. I mean, not that Scotland can't win in Dublin, they can, but permutations-wise, it would take, I think everyone agrees, a miracle for Ireland not to be listed in the trophy.
This would be true. Although, weirdly, mate, like, it's a funny game, isn't it? Nobody gave England a chance last weekend. Nobody gave them a shot in hell. The last time we won in Ireland with a Scotland side I was playing, it was 2010. It was against Joe Schmidt and Brian O'Driscoll and Paulie O'Connell, and nobody gave us a chance in hell, but somehow we managed to do it, and this side's better than ours. So if there's a time to get a triple crown, this is it. But mate, looking forward to Super Saturday again. We've no idea where everyone's going to finish, and that's what makes it exciting, a proper Super Saturday. And really looking forward to seeing France take on England in Lyon to round things off. So should be an exceptional game.
And aside from all that, St. Patrick's weekend, see you in Dublin, Johnny.
We are going to get together, and I can't remember last time we saw each other, but we're both going to be there. I'll be with ITV, you'll be with ITV. We might have a Guinness. Have you taken Monday off?
Who knows? Sunday, Monday. Yes, we'll see what happens.
Tuesday's off as well. Book it in.
Cheers, Johnny. A big thanks to Joe Worsley for joining us, and thanks to all you guys for listening. Make sure you hit subscribe, leave us a nice review if you can, check us out on Rugby Pass and on YouTube, and we'll be back with another episode. Could be Monday, could be Tuesday, could be Wednesday. See you next week, Johnny.
Might not. See you in Dublin, mate.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.